Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that will never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. What? It's over the bar.
Hello, welcome to the RTE GA podcast. Mikey Stafford here, and I'm joined by Eamon Fitzmaurice and Rory O'Neill to look back on the football weekend. How are you doing, gents?
Good, Mikey. Very good. Mikey. Nice day, finally.
Yeah. Gorgeous. For those of you listening, the sun is shining. We will be joined by Shane McGrath to talk about hurling. But before that, we're going to have Shane McGrath and another fine hurler, Eamon Fitzmaurice, together on the podcast, just so we can address a lot of the gripes and the moaning and groaning, not from the two lads specifically, but
unlike Micheála Mura Hurtig's famous line, Eamon is from a hurling stronghold.
Indeed, he is. It's that time of year where football people aren't happy, hurling people aren't happy, television viewers aren't happy, nobody's happy. So there are obviously issues at play. It's not just a love of unhappiness. That is probably a factor. So we're going to just discuss a few of the issues around championship structures, etc., which is another way to kind of stop Rory discussing championship structures outside of that 10-minute safe space. Jackie's on holiday, by the way, but it's also in my contract that I am allowed to present a podcast anytime Wexford have a historic victory. So we'll get to that with Shane. But first of all, to matters, big ball. Eamon, you were in Salt Hill on Sunday to witness Galway. Galway's historic in its own right, three in a row. Kind of come from behind win over Mayo, their old rivals. It was a match, I think Kevin McStay kind of quite intriguingly said, you know, he kind of said afterwards that there's not a massive difference between winning by a point and losing by a point. So he was being philosophical about it, which some people might argue is down to the fact that his draw for the All-Ireland group stages isn't terrible now, having lost that match.
Possibly, Mikey. He mightn't have been as philosophical Monday morning, maybe, when he was reflecting on it, because it was a disappointing loss for whichever one of them was going to lose the game, because it was a great battle, and it was brilliant to be there in the first place, because it did feel like a big championship Sunday. There was a big crowd there, the weather was good, you know, there was a bit of an edge in terms of the rivalry. You could see afterwards, with the way that Padraig Joy spoke, how motivated they were and how annoyed they were with the conversation that's been around them for a lot of this year. And they showed great stuff to pull it out. But I think, look, to me, there is a big difference whether you win by a point or lose by a point. I think when you win, particularly when you're putting silverware on the table, are either team going to win? Sam Maguire, you know, you'd have your doubts whether they can go all the way and win Sam Maguire. So it's a big chance to win some provincial silverware. Great win for Galway. They're due a lot of credit, because I did expect them to perform, to be honest. I did expect them to react to the Sligo game, but I still felt that Mayo would probably win beforehand. I just felt that to go from where they were in terms of all the absentees and to get them up to the level that they needed to be at, it was going to be a big ask in 2 weeks, but they did. And they, you know, obviously Damien Comer's performance was a huge part to that. And Rob Finnerty benefited, I think, from having Comer beside him as well. And his performance was excellent as well. I think he's the top scorer from playing the championship now as it stands, Rob Finnerty. So impressive from Galway. I would say Mayo would have been disappointed though afterwards, and they reflected for sure, Mikey.
Yeah, we'll get back to Galway in a minute, because I would like to kind of focus on them as the winners of the match, and they're kind of quite interesting. But Rory, Mayo, to me, it seems in the last couple of years, and like it predates Kevin McStay, I think, not to say it's down to him, but you get the impression that Mayo are losing a lot of these close games now that previously you kind of bank on them to win, unless they're playing against Dublin. Like maybe it's the youth, maybe it's just kind of they've lost that kind of core of players, bar a couple of notable exceptions like Aidan O'Shea and Killeen O'Connor. But like, you know, they're now losing those close games that used to be almost the hallmark of Mayo to win.
Mm. Yeah, I thought they were the better team for her.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
65, you know, I thought they were the better team for 65, 70% of the game. It's a mark of Galway's, I suppose, resilience that they managed to stick at it and eke it out in the end. I don't know if I'd be pushing any panic buttons from a Mayo perspective. Are they a worse team? I mean, they were 2 points up in the 70th minute. Now, the three scores that Galway got to win it were all dead balls. The game at that stage, you would have probably hoped would have become a little bit more unstructured. And maybe that sometimes favours Mayo, where they can play with that sort of freedom coming down the home stretch. But I mean, as a game, I thought it was top class. I thought it was a brilliant Connacht final. I think it represented everything that's good about provincial football, to be honest. And for some of the people that might be writing the epitaphs of provincial football championships and finals particularly, I think the weekend just gone. Big crowd in New Cusick Park and a big crowd in Peir Stadium probably blips that particular argument on its head, or certainly gives a lot of grist to the mill for the provincial councils when they're going into face.
I'm not sure 12,000 at the Munster final kind of constitutes
still,
a big crowd.
It still looks good. It looked good on TV. The stadium itself looked busy. There was a lot of colour there. It's as much as you could have probably hoped for, I think, to a certain extent. And it was, you know, but I think like as a game, it had full court presses, as they now like to call them, at different times. It had teams dropping off. It had teams looking to play quick counters. It had fly goalkeepers. It had games of lob the keeper. It had kind of all the modern ingredients for modern intercounty Gaelic football. Sometimes that maybe doesn't exactly suit Mayo, but I thought they showed a level of patience and a level of grit, and they were right in there right at the very end. Now, a couple of decisions, I suppose, look, maybe, you know, one day you get them and one day you don't. But I don't necessarily see them being disparaged in some way that I wouldn't necessarily see their standing in the overall picture being too diluted by what ultimately happened in the last 5 minutes. I think, would I call it a smash and grab? That's probably been a bit harsh on Galway as well, but I think from a Mayo perspective, there was a few things I think that they probably do need to tidy up on. The one big aspect for me in the game, and I know Kevin was questioned afterwards in relation to the decisions towards the end. If I was in Kevin's shoes, and I'd imagine knowing Kevin, this is exactly what he might be thinking. I think Kevin would be slightly more annoyed. When you go after a short kick out and you rumble that kick out twice, right? And you get nothing out of it. Now, even at club level, Mikey, if you rumble a short kick out, it's a score. And it's nearly a goal. It's nearly 100% a goal chance, right? They did it twice and got nothing out of either one. And you really do need to be converting those. Having said that, the big chance that Galway got as well, look, that was a bit of a goal line scramble. And how that stayed out, I don't know.
How that stayed out.
But look, I think overall, yeah, they'll be disappointed to lose to Galway again. That'll definitely, you know, that'll annoy them. But I don't know if it changes a huge amount heading into the round robin.
Not to play Tuesday afternoon quarterback here, Eamon, too much, but were you surprised that Aidan O'Shea was substituted with the game still in the melting pot?
They were 11-8 up at that stage as well, I think, weren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. He had a big impact in the first half in terms of getting on ball, Mikey, but ironically, or for whatever reason, it still seems to be such a work in progress for them that he was winning, but he was showing, he had a great battle off the ball with Sean Fitzgerald, and he was showing hard and showing well, and they did manage to get him on a bit of ball. But in terms of the lads around him timing runs off him and crashing off him, that bit of kind of chemistry or synchronicity was missing the last day. And they didn't get as much joy, I felt, off him as obviously Galway got at the other end of Damien Comer. But he was peripheral in the second half. Then, Mikey, he wasn't in the game much. Now, they could have done with him at the end when they were under pressure on their own kick-out, and he would have been a good option to have gone long to. you know, to try and win a ball when they were under the bit of pressure. It seems to be a thing that they've done throughout the year, that they, when Killian O'Connor's coming off, Aidan O'Shea goes off, that they seem to be kind of dovetailing with each other in terms of minutes, whether it's something around their age or whether it's a legs thing or something, I don't know, but that's something that the Mayo management have done throughout the year. So maybe it's something they'll think about going forward, just from the point of view of the bit of leadership. But as Rory said, they were the couple ahead at the time, and they probably felt, the game did feel like that. I felt watching it that Mayo were kind of about to take over and squeeze Galway and kind of kick for home. But in fairness to Galway, they responded brilliantly, and they really, really grounded out. And you have to give them massive credit for that. And you know, the Galway substitutions worked so well. Shane Welch not starting him, and even though it took him kind of 15 or 20 minutes to get into the game, he had a massive impact there in the last 15, 20 minutes. And that worked very well for Galway. So, you know, it's often the way, isn't it, when you win, that the kind of decisions and those substitutions and calls that you make, they pan out the way that you'd like them to pan out. And then when you lose, it doesn't quite work out as well.
Yeah. You mentioned him as the top scorer. Oh, sorry, no, that's his Rob partner, Rob Finnerty. But Rory, I'd say Damien Comer, there's not too many footballers more enjoyable to watch playing the game, really. And I'd say there's not many footballers more disagreeable to mark in football than Damien Comer. He's just phenomenal. He's just some kind of a throwback, that he's just a delight to watch playing the game.
Oh, really. Yeah. And he, like I know people go on about Shane Walsh and the impact that he has, but Shane Walsh was dropped for Sunday. Let's be perfectly honest. Shane Walsh that was a selection issue. And I think from a Galway perspective, I think they are quite a defensive team. And so for instance, I'd be very interested to see when they come up against Derry, where you really do need to defend from 15 back, right? Because you know Derry are going to come at you in waves. Will Shane Walsh start that match? I'd have my doubts. But you can be damn sure Comer will. And it's just kick it into him any way you want. You know, high, low, he'll come out. He's the ultimate team player. He'll create. He will lay off. He shows leadership. I remember seeing him for the first time, I might have said this to you before, Mikey, in an under-21 final, as it was back then. Janie, how many years ago was that? It was down in Limerick. Galway were playing Cork in an under-21 final. I think Aidan Walsh and a few others. It was at least 11, 12 years ago. And he was just extraordinary that night. Cork couldn't get a handle on him at all. And I was just looking at this guy going, wow, what a player Galway have got here for the next however many years. Injuries have obviously been a big issue because he's such an attritional player, and he's so physical, and he's so brave, and he's so courageous, and he gets stuck in as well on top of everything else. He's a nightmare, I'd say, to Mark. You definitely need a plus one with him. Like, you need someone to give you a dig out. I wouldn't have any fault with Mac Brian for the situation he found himself in one-on-one, because he's just such a handful, and was absolutely man of the match by a good distance. And I think, look, it meant a lot to them. And I think it was a real signature performance insofar as a signature victory, because their year really had been very stop-start. I think Comer himself mentioned in an interview post-match that they'd only got 8 or 9 on the field in a training session just before Christmas, which I thought was extraordinary. It'll give you an indication of how many injuries they have been dealing with. And I mean, look, injuries are part of every inter-county setup, but they just seem to have been slightly more afflicted, worse than maybe others for whatever reason. And that just can be one of these things. And it just goes to show, when they have everyone, it was even interesting to see Killian McDade named at 26. I know he didn't get any game time, but it'll give you an indication that he's probably closer. And when they have everyone on the field, they will be a right match now for anybody heading into the round robin.
That leads me nicely on to what I was going to ask Eamon next. Eamon, it's interesting, like, when you list off, like, Comer is one of them, McDade, obviously, Shane Walsh, Liam Silk, Sean Kelly, Matthew Tierney, Conroy to an extent. That's got not very many minutes in the league. And it says, they're a championship team. They get everybody on the field this year. Everybody's fit and firing, which they weren't last year. You say, Jesus, what a team. The flip side of that is that a lot of these lads aren't young. Some of them are, like, it's like, who's coming behind it? You know, the Galway were kind of missing them so much during the league is a sign of how good the players are, but is it also a little bit of a concern that maybe they don't have the depth that perhaps we thought they did?
Possibly, Mikey, but I think in fairness, the caliber of the players that you were talking about and so many of them being out, you know, like, I mean, in fairness, during the league, the likes of Killian O'Kareen did very well, you know, I think probably surpassed expectations this year. There was Rory Cunningham got game time. There's a Sam O'Neill who was under 21 or under 20 last year, midfielder for him. He's on the way. So there are some players coming, all right. But I think, you know, during the league, and we would have all said it, that all teams have injuries, but no team had injuries to the level of player that Galway had in terms of all of their top players were out together. So it was very hard. And in fairness, like, following on from Rory's point on Damien Comer as well, and one thing I felt at the game was that you have to give the Galway management plaudits from the point of view that they played him close to goal and kept him close to goal for the whole game. He came out for a couple of kickouts and won a couple of kickouts, but in the past, you know, we've seen him going back all the way into his defence, tackling, being part of counter-attacks and everything, but himself and Rob Finnerty stayed up, and they had shape to use them. Then they were able to kick ball inside them, and we saw unfolding what unfolded. So he probably doesn't have the miles in the legs either yet to be up and down the pitch like he would have in the past, but the way he played, you'd be saying keep him as close to goals as much as you can. But no, I think the ironic thing about it now, the way it's panned out, Mikey, is if they can keep all of those players fit and get them up to that level of kind of match fitness, they're fresh. They're coming into the championship completely fresh. They're in great shape. They're, you know, that some of them, the likes of Sean Kelly, will need a bit more football to get up to his real top level. Shane Welch, similarly, will benefit from what he got the last day. Getting Killian McDade back in. Matthew Tierney looked very good when he came on. So, you know, the way it has worked out, I know they would have been gnashing their teeth going through the league and they would have been impatient, but with everyone back and everyone fit and keep them fit, they're going to be fresh and they are going to be a handful for sure.
And just one special mention as well, Mikey, I do think it's important to give Conor Gleeson a shout out because he's a goalkeeper he's a goalkeeper that I think it was a 2 years ago against Armagh where they had the game almost but sewn up and a couple of high ones into the box. And he maybe took a bit of criticism maybe for, you know, the goalkeepers generally do when those sort of, you know, Hail Marys go in and end up in the back of the net, even though I sometimes think it's a bit unfair in a goalkeeper when there's about 10 lads rushing in on top of you to try and punch the ball into the back of the net. He lost his place at times where they were trying Bernard Power, etc. And, you know, I think for him to make a couple of great saves, to kick that winning score at the end, hold his nerve at different times where he is playing that fly keeper to a much smaller extent than what Oran Lynch will be doing above in Derry. You know, actually both goalkeepers, Reap, the absolute cojones on Reap there. It was like a fella playing snooker and he's trying, like he mentioned it at one stage, Eamon, in commentary, the risks he was taking with those short kickouts. It was incredible. How, you know, like it was really small gaps and little windows that he was trying to squeeze this ball through, but it'll give you an indication of the fine margins that they are prepared to take risks with the kickout these days to get the safe one away.
Okay, we'll move
maybe
on.
Maybe not so safe.
Yeah, the move where they're safe when they get to their intended target. We'll move on to the Munster final. We'll only spend a couple of minutes on this because Rory's already mentioned the crowd, which is one of the plus points, and it may come up in the next section with Shane. Jack O'Connor was finding the positives, Eamon, in not scoring 5 goals against Clare this time because he says it means that they won't go into the group stages feeling too good about themselves. So you can say one thing about Jack O'Connor, he's the eternal optimist.
Well, after winning the Munster Championship, he would have been in good form, in fairness, Mikey. But look, I think from the Kerry perspective that, again, it was a case of job done. Again, they'll be looking at things, you know, that they would have liked to have scored a goal or two when the chances presented. There was a couple of goal chances against them that they'll be looking at. I think you have to credit Clare more so than, you know, kind of saying where Kerry at. I think you have to give massive credit to Clare, to the job that Mark Fitzgerald is doing there. It's, you know, considering we all know all the players that they've lost and everything else, but just going in terms of the winning margin, conceding those five goals above in Limerick last year, they've come a long way in 12 months. You know, they'll be going into the group stages, try and get a win in those group stages. And it's been a hugely successful year. Obviously, they were unlucky not to get promoted, but at the same time, there'll be an awful lot of positivity. And those lads that opted to go off for the year and do different things this year, I'm sure if they're talking to the lads in the squads, they'll be saying, lads, this fella's good, get back in. And if we've everyone here to build on what we've been doing this year, we're going to be a handful next year. So there's a lot of positive vibes around Clare from that perspective. Kerry, yeah, look, last year, Kerry obviously won that Munster final, went in then and got caught in Killarney by Mayo, and they were very kind of undercooked that particular day, whereas they're going to be very much on guard going into the Monaghan game in Killarney this year in a couple of weeks' time. So, again, I think in Kerry there's this kind of feeling of being a bit underwhelmed at the moment, whereas I'm not really. I'm kind of in a position where I think that they're getting the job done. There's still a good few of the lads that have gears to go through,
yeah.
which is fine at this time of the year. Now they need to start going through the gears over the next couple of weeks and, you know, start improving and hit Croke Park then for the quarter final, really coming towards top gear. But I'd be fairly positive. There are things to work on, which is great. You don't want to be the finished article at this time of the year, even from a training perspective, and having those things to get your teeth stuck into is good. So I'd be positive. I'd be a bit like Jack in the optimistic front as well, Mikey, there.
Maybe it's something you need to be Kerry manager, although maybe it's easy to be optimistic when you're a Kerry football manager. I don't know. Rory, one thing I suppose Jason Foley's return was very welcome by folk in the kingdom, but it didn't stop them coughing up a fair few goal chances, which was one thing Jack O'Connor mentioned after the game.
But I think Kerry will always cough up goal chances, because their play in the modern game, Kerry is attacking. Outside of Dublin, Kerry play probably the most attacking brand of football. They will keep, you won't see David Clifford going back in his own half back line. You probably won't see Sean O'Shea. The furthest you'll see him maybe is drifting out towards midfield. They will keep players up. So as a result, that's going to leave you slightly more exposed. Where Kerry in the past have always been, I suppose, blessed, is that they've been blessed with mano-a-mano defenders that don't really need that plus one or protection. And possibly in a modern game, you just can't get away with that now anymore. Every team is so well drilled, trained, in the physical conditioning. You can see lads just have so much pace and power now. And like if you won't cough them up if you're playing 10, 12 behind the ball, but Kerry won't play that way. So that's not to say that they're playing this Brazilian silky brand, because I don't think any intercounty team is, but they do play a slightly more adventurous and a slightly more advanced brand of Gaelic football. And as a result, you will every now and again leave yourself exposed. But look, the reality is they're going to outscore you 9 times out of 10. They will do that to nearly every team. It's just on those bad days where maybe they shut down a Clifford R2 and Sean O'Shea, and then all of a sudden then you're dependent on your supporting cast to rack up a big enough score. I think Kerry are absolutely fine. I think Jason Foley coming back, it's great to see Brian O'Bugliuk back in. I think he's been a big he's massive player for Kerry, just in terms of go forward ball and that defensive solidity. I think he gives a lovely mix on that front. I know he was taken off, but he wouldn't be back all that long injury wise, Eamon, would that be fair?
No. He was only back, I'd say, you know, the fact that Graham O'Sullivan had that groin tweak, he probably ended up playing more than they would have probably expected. But yeah, I agree with you. It's massive, even for himself personally, because he's had a very frustrating 12 months with different niggles and knocks and illnesses and every kind of a thing. So it's great to see him.
And look, I think the only negative, really major negative, I suppose, from a Kerry perspective, that Gavin White injury did look like a serious one. You'd hope that's not something that's going to knock him out in the short or medium term. But other than that, I think they're going well. Like, one of the things I'm hearing quite a lot of, Mikey, is, oh, Kerry haven't shown us anything new, or Mayo haven't shown us anything new, or Galway haven't shown us anything new, or Derry, or all these teams. The unfortunate reality is the only team that has shown any sort of diversity in terms of personnel, game plan, and the way they want to play it is the team that everybody is chasing. And that's the real difficult vista. You know, Dublin are the only team, from what I can see, that have actually, you know, improved their personnel, put a huge depth into their panel.
Oh, Derry, in fairness.
Derry still couldn't beat Dublin standing on one leg with half the team, basically.
They have a better panel than last year, though.
Yeah, who's Derry do?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's fair enough. And they're probably playing a more evolved game, fair enough, which, look, we saw some of the manifestations of that the last time round. But I do think it is the case that the chasing pack have just not caught up right across the board, and Dublin have maybe stretched on a little bit. Now, will we know exactly where Dublin stand after next Sunday? Obviously not. But I think Kerry are in a good place.
Okay. And Eamon, you say, you know, there's gears left in some of these fellas. I'd be interested. I know you haven't managed in this structure, but you're probably not looking to be peaking for Cavan at home, Meath away, and presumably Louth in a neutral venue. You don't want to slip up. You want to get straight into the quarterfinals, but you're probably not going to see Pete Kerry in their next three matches either, are you?
I think that first game at home to Monaghan is going to really concentrate the minds, to be honest, Mikey. I think they'll be thinking back to last year when Mayo had that kind of extended break in the lead into that game, and they came with all guns blazing. They played very well, and they were a better pitch than Kerry that day in Killarney. So they'll be wary of Monaghan. We haven't heard anything from Monaghan since they've been beaten. They've had that time to gather themselves. They had a lot of injuries as well. Will they have all of those lads back? Will they be, you know, back up to full strength? Rory Began will have obviously spent, you know, the last 5 or 6 weeks training with the squad the whole time, and that'll be good for their understanding and chemistry of each other. So I think they'll be wary of that game, first of all, Mikey. And then when you win the first game, you're kind of on the road. So we probably won't see Pete Kerry for another bit, but at the same time, I will expect them. You'll see the graph starting to go up over the next couple of weeks.
Apologies to people at Monaghan and Cavan. I got you confused. I was looking at Mayo's and Kerry's groups at the same time and got them mixed up. I'm not confusing Monaghan people for Cavan people. Some of my best friends are Monaghan people and Cavan people, honestly. Okay, we'll leave the football there. I'm just going to welcome Shane McGrath along in a second, just for our little corner of hostility, so we can all just vent. So back in a moment.
He hits it. It's over the ball.
Right, we're back, and we've been joined by a member of the Hurling Hezbollah, Shane McGrath, to discuss everything that's wrong with the GAA at the moment. How are you, Shane?
I'm good, Mikey. Yeah, no fear, mate.
No. You're supposed to say you're angry, Shane. You're as angry as hell. You're not going to stand for it. Yeah, listen, we just wanted to do it does seem that newspapers, podcasts, etc. have been taken up at the moment with a great deal of, shall we say, disquiet with all things GAA at the moment. And I think it probably all stems from a couple of issues. One being the calendar, another one being kind of broadcast rights deals, where obviously we have skin in the game here. Not that anybody on this podcast actually negotiated any of the broadcast deals, but obviously RT are a player in it. So first for you, Shane, because this probably a commonly held view, one I'm actually seeing quite regularly now on Twitter, which you shouldn't take as real world, but should every single Munster Championship match be on the television, in your opinion, Shane? As a man who works in radio.
I do think it's the best thing the GAA have in regards to championships. It's the most exciting one. Should every one of them be on the telly? I suppose, was every one of them on the telly before? I'm not too sure, were they? Like, I mean, we have the option now of GAA Go, obviously, to show. I think the frustration is when the bigger ones, you know, like, say, or when the match is an absolute classic, which seems to be the way with the Munster Championship, more often than not, I think people's frustration grows. I think GAA Go has definitely improved as regards, you know, the programming, the, you know, even the Wi-Fi issues that were there. I don't think, I can only speak for myself. I know that GAA Go is working very well with us. Should all the Munster Championship matches be on the telly? I think where possible, yeah, I think they should. If we're trying, like what I'm trying to say, Mikey, is the Munster Championship is the best hurling championship that's out there at the moment. Now, Leinster are giving a good run for the moment this year, right? But as regards excitement and everything, that's the best what we have to advertise right now. And I suppose, when you want to get hurling out there, or any sport out there, what do you show? You show the very, very best of what you have, as much as you possibly can. And I suppose, yeah, in my honest opinion, yeah, I would be trying to get as many Munster Championship hurling matches on the telly as possible.
Amen. As a football man, would you be happy for no football matches to be on the television for the first month of the championship to facilitate hurling's wish?
It used to be like that, I'd say, Mikey. Kind of, if you went back to the maybe the time of Super 8s or even previous to that, the month of May really in early June was taken up with a lot of the time the Munster Hurling Championship kind of dominated what was being shown, and it was what we knew at the time, and I don't think anyone took too much notice of it. Look, there's so many knock-on effects with the split season in terms of there's so many quality matches on every weekend and everyone wants to see everything. It's hard to get everything on. I know part of the rights deal, you mentioned it already, is that the four provincial football finals have to be shown free to air. That's part of the deal, to the best of my knowledge. Mm-hmm. So,
correct.
A weekend like the weekend just gone by, that takes care of your Sunday. That kind of crowds a Sunday. And then on the Saturday, where GA Go seems to be the broadcast option on a Saturday, by default, then you have some of those brilliant hurling matches on GA Go. So whether it's that you have all of the football provincial finals on the same weekend, and it's just a complete football weekend, a Saturday and a Sunday, and you have it as a break from the hurling, you could show more hurling free to air after that, then I don't know. But it's just that there's so much on every weekend, it's very hard to get it all on. With all the giving out, Mikey, I've taken a kind of vow this year that I'm just focusing on the individual match that I'm at a weekend and enjoying that for what it is. And I'm not really looking at all the big picture stuff, but clearly for a lot of people, it's not working at the moment.
Yeah, this is your safe space and just have a little chat about it. Rory, I suppose that the calendar obviously is an issue which you regularly discuss, but within the calendar, it's kind of wonky that, you know, the football at the moment is a bit bloodless. Not all the games. You mentioned the Connacht final was very good, and not a lot of jeopardy. When you see Paddy Clifford lift the Munster Cup and the Munster Championship trophy, and like, he didn't even get it above his chin, I think it was like that, and then he put it down again. You know, it's some of these matches, they're four titles, but they don't really feel like there's jeopardy on them, whereas all these Munster matches aren't for titles, they're round robin games, and they feel like they're full of jeopardy, and so are the Leinster matches now. So it's kind of trying to, they're two championships, but they're on different tracks, different speeds, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, you kind of equate the hurling, it's a bit like, well, the football championship is a bit like, you know, sort of commercial airline, you know, at the moment, nice and safe, taking it nice and handy speed wise. Whereas the hurling is very much Top Gun. It's like, you know, like, let's go crash and burn straight away. And there's a huge difference in terms of just a sense of feeling around it. And that's, look, it's obvious for the reasons why. I think this weekend coming, it'll probably become more acute again. The chances are Cork and Limerick play out an absolute barnstormer on Saturday night. And on Sunday, you will have certainly one provincial football final that might be lacking in competitiveness. Let's be perfectly honest. Would it be the case that RT would prefer to show Cork versus Limerick as opposed to Dublin Louth? I'm sure that would be absolutely the case, but that's not the way the contract is currently configured. I think from my point of view, I think, look, we've said this from a long way back. This is all comes back to a calendar that's in on top of itself. If you go back to the 2018 All-Ireland final, when the original hurling final was and football finals were pulled forward, that was the first year of the round robin as well. It wasn't anywhere near the same level of gripes or given out that was going on now, because it was spread out over a much greater period of time and it allowed a lot more oxygen for the different sports and different channels. Now, I know Sky were involved at that stage, and maybe the GA Go thing is something that people have a problem with. Personally, I don't. I think from RT's perspective, you do also have to remember, is by pulling the entire thing forward into the month of April means you're putting it up against contractual obligations in other sports. RT has a responsibility to show rugby and GAA and soccer and athletics. It's not just a GAA channel. And therefore, you're going to be competing with airtime, with women's sports, women's Six Nations, the URC, all of those types of things. Whereas when you had it pushed further into the summer, you removed a lot of those schedule conflicts and clashes. And it freed up a little bit more calendar space for you to make sure that you could probably put more games on. Because bear in mind, when I started in RT, we used to show 53 or 54 games a year. Now, this is that's a long time ago. But it was possible, is the point I'd make. You know, obviously, Park Duffy in his wisdom decided that was too many back then and reduced it to 40. And now I think it's down to somewhere around the mid-30s. But look, I think Eamon's point is well made. I just think, like, between giving out about calendars, giving out about, I can't see this match, there's too many matches on, there's not enough games on, why can't I see this, when can I see it, you know, like, there's a huge amount of giving out constantly being done. I think the big takeaway and the big learning, for the want of a better expression, if I was certainly in the governing body's shoes, I would say, look, there's something wrong here. There's something wrong. Are we going to address it, or are we going to stick our heads in the sand for another 12 months and hope that it resolves itself?
We'll finish moaning in a minute, but Shane, Rory mentioned the calendar. I think everybody loves the round robin though in Hurling. They love the back-to-back games, the nature of it, the fact that the change is week on week and you're trying to work out the permutations. I don't think the structure of the provincial hurling championships is an issue, do you?
No.
No, I don't think so. I still think it's too early though.
Take the time of year out of place, but actually the speed at which the games come, etc., is not a problem.
No, that's it. Yeah, no. And I think it kind of maybe because the weather has been good now for the last few weeks, people kind of feel there is that kind of sort of championship feel because, you know, the sun was shining for, you know, a couple of the rounds. But I still, like, as a club player myself, I know the club lads, like, they love knowing when they're going to be in or when they're going to be out. What my argument is with the calendar is that I still think maybe the whole thing should only be getting going this weekend. Maybe the first round should only be on this weekend. Right, it's 3 weeks later, but, like, in the grander scheme of things, like, I still think you'll get your county championships played off, you'll get your provincial.
And sorry, Shane, in the 2018 championship, again, that famous one that Limerick won, which is the first year of the round robin, the hurling championship started on May 12th, which is this weekend.
Yeah. It's still only going to be two teams that are going to be in the All Ireland final. I mean, the other 30 odd club championships can get going, like, you know, but, you know, if it's timetabled, or, you know, it's, you know, before knowing where your team or where your county's at, you have a fair idea that you're going to be out the end of July, start of August. That won't apply for only two club championships. And for the last few years in the hurling side of things, Limerick and Kilkenny, they have both comfortably got their county championships played off, like, you know, because it's well structured. Like, you know, you don't, they have groups, the way it's structured is there isn't any time delay. So look,
that's a really interesting point, because, like, when the split season came in, nothing really changed in Dublin. And you're talking about a complex county. It's a proper jewel county that plays hurling football week on, week off, that has a team, certainly in one court, that is almost guaranteed to go deep into the championship every year, potentially playing on the last day, or certainly has done for 9 of the last 11 seasons. Yet the split season came in, the leagues, all your master fixture list came out, nothing really changed. The April for clubs month thing and concept, yeah, that went. And they're a little bit more squeezed in terms of when the fixtures come back. And they were still able to take 3 weeks off in August, you know? Yeah. So, like, I said it a million times before, and I know Kevin O'Donovan in Cork is probably, you know, throwing stuff at the TV screen as I'm saying this now, because I understand the complexities that exist in a massive county like that to run off club championships. This was, in terms of the calendar itself, the greatest act of self-harm the association ever perpetrated upon itself, and it will remain so.
Okay, before we let Eamon go and we actually talk about the hurling, I just want to actually ask you, Eamon, a hurling question, because as we mentioned earlier, you are from a part of Kerry where hurling is quite popular. Do you think hurling is being damaged at the moment by the number of games being shown on TV and the number of games being shown on GAA Go. Would you fear for hurling in North Kerry based on current broadcast trends?
No, I wouldn't feel fear for hurling in North Kerry, but I think it's not so much that hurling is harming itself, but in terms of if you want to go to the next level of promotion,
yeah,
and you want to, you know, like if you just take a Kerry context, if you want to see hurling being played in West Kerry, South Kerry, everywhere else, the more exposure that kids get to watching those top class games, the better. But whisper it, Mikey, you can get a GAA Go subscription if you want, and you can actually tune into those games. They are available, but you know, I understand the free to air argument and all of that, but not so much harming itself, but maybe not helping itself either in terms of the promotion is probably the way I'd put it.
Okay. Right. Eamon, you may now leave and we're going to let Shane talk about hurling, which is when he's in his happy place. I'm going to smile now. I haven't seen Shane not smiling for this long. See you, Eamon.
Slán.
Good luck.
Right. So the weekend that was, I know we're talking on a Tuesday, it being a bank holiday. We'll get on to Munster in a minute, Shane, but you're going to have to indulge the Wexford man here now.
Yeah.
Speaking of GAA Go, myself and my family were all on GAA Go because my mother's in her 80s and doesn't like climbing steps. So we stood in the front row in Wexford Park and had a good view of the closing stages, and people had a good view of us too. So that's definitely worth a GAA Go subscription. But I'm not going to start with Wexford because we never stop. My first question, Shane, would be on Galway, actually. And it was my colleague Conor Neville who kind of said this to me first, so I won't claim to have come up with this idea. But do you think there's any truth in the idea that maybe Henry Shefflin and Eamon O'Shea are kind of confused? Like their philosophies on hurling mightn't be mixing very well? Would that be one possible explanation for why Galway just seemed to be a shadow of themselves this year?
I don't know, Mikey. I don't know. There's some talent in the room above there, like, but... Oh, look, as a player, as someone who's lucky enough to be a player in Intercounty, like, you never go out to play bad, and you never go out to give a poor performance, or, you know, you never go out to, like, make it look like you're not trying. That's never the case. But that's to the greater public looks like what's going on at the moment is baffling. Like I the talent that's above in Galway, and... Look, obviously, I know Eamon and he would have coached me and stuff, you know, and Eamon would be, you know, about, you know, hitting space and, you know, hurling with freedom, hurling off the cuff and things like that. For Henry's career, that's the way it was too. He hurled with freedom. That's why he's one of the best ever, one of the most decorated ever, the most decorated ever. Like, he hurled with freedom. He hurled it as he saw it in front of him. And what they both inherited is, like, a group of players with so much potential, so much talent, so much skill. And they just can't seem to win when it matters most. I don't know what Mahal Donoghue actually did so wrong, like, that he wasn't even left on as Galway manager. Because whatever he was doing, whether he knew the culture or knew the players so well from being immersed in himself, he got the very, very best out of them. They reached the pinnacle. Like, even in 2018, like, they had a few injuries and stuff. They still got to the All-Ireland final, and we all thought before the All-Ireland final, this Galway are going to win this. And obviously then, you know, potentially the greatest hurling team of all time, if they do what they're going to do this year, which they look like it, come along and, you know, they change the whole geographic layout of hurling, because we've all kind of been playing catch up since. So I just don't know, Mikey, like, how can, like, if different managers come in and different coaches come in and different strength and conditioning's coming in, but the bulk of the players remain the same. I don't know, like, where is the answer? I don't think it can be what's on the sideline all the time. It does have to come down sometimes to the players. And I think the weekend is down to the players, to be totally honest.
Mm.
I know Henry achieved so much and he's a serial winner as a player, but geez, being a manager, it's just a completely different world. Like, you're going in trying to look after everybody rather than just yourself. It's so hard to do. And I just don't know. Like, I think the answer, what I'm trying to say is, I think the answer with Galway is probably in the mirror for a lot of the players. They have so much talent, Mikey. And I'm Rory would agree, and everyone. Like, I mean, I said about their full forward line during last week. I said, like, if I was sitting down to pick a full forward line and I knew that it was going to be Conor Whelan, Conor Cooney, and Cathal Mannion, I would be thinking, if we get anywhere enough ball into these lads, we have a chance to win this game. It just doesn't seem to be the way. Wexford, obviously, your own county. It's either one or the other with them. There's no middle. It's either we're going up and we can't get any sort of performance, and Antrim turn is over, and rightly so they did. Or you're going down and you're giving one of the best performances for Wexford over a number of years now, I'd say.
Yeah.
And at home.
Since the last time they needed to put in a which is against last year. Like Wexford are, what was Churchill's line about the Russians? Yeah, like Wexford are an absolute mystery. Like I can't figure them out at all.
There's no third gear, Rory. Like it's either first gear or fifth gear or, you know, whatever, sixth gear. Yeah. There's no like, Wexford weren't too bad today. It's either Wexford were absolutely brutal or by Jesus, they were unreal. And that's what they were at weekend. They were unreal. They won that match 14 men with 20 minutes to go.
Yeah.
The breeze was in Galway's favour. Everything you could have lined up, you tried to say, right, we're a man up, have the breeze. Let's try and push on and win this game. Not Wexford at all, the hurling. I think it was Eddie Brennan said all the men were wearing Wexford jerseys at the weekend. I thought that was a fair comment to make now. And that's the way it seemed. And I just don't know where Galway are going. Yeah. I don't know. Like say now, like theoretically, lads, you know, if they don't win the Leinster final or even get to it maybe, or they're not doing well or getting to an Ireland final, are they going to look at Henry Shefflin and say, not anymore, you know? Is Henry going to look at it himself and say, look, I came up, I tried my best. I thought I did my best. I don't know where it's going. And another manager will come in. And will that be the solution to the problem? Maybe not. Do Galway need someone from Galway to be the manager? To really understand the culture down there? To understand the ins and outs of all the clubs? Who gets on with who doesn't? What do I need to do with this lad? Etc. I don't know. But I just don't feel it can always be look out to the sideline and, yeah, this is your fault. I don't think it is this time.
Yeah. On Wexford, quickly before we move on to Munster, Rory, I think one major thing is you watched them against Dublin and you watched them against Antrim, and they were very susceptible to runs down the middle. So you're kind of looking at Damien Rec and saying, is he big enough to be a centre half back in the modern game, etc. And you were looking at the full back line and Conor Foley, and whether he was the right man for the job. Liam Ryan came in and played full back.
Well, that's the thing. Liam Ryan coming back
and got booked after 3 minutes. Yeah, so you knew what mood he was in. And secondly, Damien Rec was a man. He was my man of the match. He was phenomenal. He was everywhere. He was, especially in the first half, he was unbelievable. So you show her up 3-6, as we often say, and like, you know, that's the end of your troubles, really. So that was really. I know Rory O'Connor and Lee Chin will always get the headlines, and Conor Hearn was amazing, but 3-6 being shored up was the key, I think.
Well, those names you mentioned there now were all the standouts for me as well. Conor Hearn, unreal midfield. Lee Chin, I think Tolo Cusack said he's like a superhero, and he is. He's like something out of a Marvel comics. And when he's in that kind of mood, and even in defeat the week before, and plus against Dublin, I mean, he should be certainly in All-Star nominee category at this stage already. But I did think Rory O'Connor was outstanding now. I mean, some of the points when he was in that, like Rory O'Connor kind of gave a display, I felt, that people underestimate the talent he has. I think if he can get on ball and if he shows that he's interested and he's in the mood, he's as good as anything that any other county has. And
well, he's that two gear Wexford hurler that Shane mentioned, really, is Rory, unfortunately. He's either first gear or sixth gear, you know?
Yeah. Well, he's probably symptomatic of the way Wexford can be at times. But look, I think they just played, like you could see it from the start, big crowd, 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon, big Wexford crowd that was. And I think they gave the supporters something really to latch on to. I thought 20 minutes to go, even though they had a 6-point lead, I thought they were going to be in trouble. It was a red card, in fairness to the referee.
It's funny, I was about 5 meters away from that on the opposite side of the cameras, and I actually thought it wasn't. But then I saw it from the side of the cameras, and was like, back to rights.
it was a red card.
It was unfortunate, but it was definitely a red card.
Yeah, like I don't think he was going to purposefully do him in that way. I think he was looking to try and put in a big hit. He made contact with an area that you're just not allowed to. And I think,
and
fairness to Sean Stack, I think he made the correct decision. And that, but then you're saying right now, this is a big test. Like 2 weeks ago, coming down the home stretch, 6 points up. With 15 players on the field, they concede two jammy goals to Dublin, and Dublin escape out of Wexford Park with a point. So, you know, like, they would have had all the excuses in the world to fold in this scenario, and they didn't. And I think it's a good measure of them. Carlo Kilkenny to come. Could they get 4 points out of that? Maybe get in the mix for Leinster final place, even despite losing to Antrim and dropping.
I'm more worried about Carlo than Kilkenny at the moment. Yeah. The way Wexford four points going.
That's the thing with Wexford. Like, you know, Carlo could. But no, I just there. It was an outstanding display by Wexford, and it was the kind of display that we were waiting for, given how encouraging some of the signs had been in the spring. And it's just about whether they can build on that now and make some knockout hurling, because I think, in fairness to Rossiter, he's a great character on the line. And I think it would be a good boost for hurling as well, because, as we know, they bring great crowds and there's great colour and crack when Wexford are involved.
Yeah, I'm going to finish up now shortly, Ed, so we better discuss the Munster Championship, to paraphrase another podcast when they talk about the Leinster Championship.
Yeah, 5 minutes left.
Shane, was that a bit of a curate's egg of a result now for you on Saturday evening, or would you have thought taking a point out of Walsh Park against a fired up Waterford would have been what you would have been happy with beforehand? Certainly what you'd be happy with about 3 or 4 minutes left, I guess.
Yeah, 70 minutes on the clock and you're down 4 points. I just thought the group showed great steel, like, you know, and like, even Sean Kennelly there, I just mentioned him from the Moneygall club, like, you know, no more so than my own club, Moneygall. Like, they're not churning out inter-county players year on year. So to have someone like Shawnee there coming on, and like, for me, that was a kind of a, as a player, like, you're sometimes when you go in and you're new to a panel. Now, Shawnee would have been in training last year, but this year now he's in proper, and you're kind of wondering, there might be that, am I good enough to be here, or what, you know, how am I going to fit in? And I think that was his stamp on it the other night with his 1-1 that he got. That's his kind of look. I'm good enough to be here. And he was. He looked lively when he came on. Would we have taken the point? Absolutely would have taken it. I thought it was a fairly closely contested battle throughout the day. Obviously, the goals were a killer for Tip. And obviously, when the referee runs across in front of your goalie as one of the best ball strikers in the country is taking the penalty, that doesn't help things either. And that was an absolute disgrace. Like, I'm all for referees getting respect and everything, but James Owens did the other day, running across in front of Barry Hogan's vision in his line of sight. Like, come on. Like, I was at an under-11 Camogie Blitz today. If it happened in an under-11 Camogie Blitz, the referee or someone would have said, take the penalty again. And we're
Can I ask you on that, Joshin? Sorry, go on.
We're on about a team of officials, like, right? And look, we're on about give respect, get respect. I get that, right? And there's a team of officials. But, like, for me, right? Like, could someone not have said to him, like, an umpire or the two umpires or the linesman or something, say, James, we're going to have to take that again. You ran across in front of the goalie. Like, Barry Hogan. Barry's a nice guy. Maybe he was too nice the other day. Maybe, like, as a goalie, he should have ran out to James Owen and said, you ran in front of me there. Now this wasn't like last minute of the game to win it. But you know what? It set the tone for the game. Mm-hmm. And I still think a draw was a fair result. I think the teams were fairly evenly matched. But, like, that was a joke there tonight, lads. An absolute joke. Like, that should have been retaken. And it should have been said as well. And if it happens again, maybe there'll be a learning. For me, I think it was a panic. I think he was at one side of the goals. We all know Stephen Bennett strikes off his left. He's going to strike, as he's looking at it, into the bottom right-hand corner. Barry Hogan's strong side is his left side as he's looking out the field. So if that ball is getting struck there and saved, chances are it's coming out to that side. And James Owens just said, blew the whistle and said, I'm at the wrong side here. I'm at the wrong side here. I need to get over there because the chances are it's not going to break over there. And people say, well, it's harder than Stephen Bennett. Do you know what? He's fully focused on lifting and striking that ball. He's not looking at the guy running across. Whereas Barry Hogan is 100 laser vision, straight out there, comes across. And you know what? It is a 1%. It is a 1% during the greater thing. So look, I hope the learning is there. I think refereeing is a very, very tough job. But you know what? When mistakes like that are being made, I think there has to be, like, you know, I'm sure they're questioned. I'm sure when the refs met that they spoke about it and in-depthly spoke about it. But for me,
It was bizarre. It was bizarre. And another thing was, because I didn't see the match because I was out after the Wexford match. I was kind of half following on my phone, but I didn't see the start of it because I was still in Wexford Park. It was picked up very widely by people watching it on TV. But a couple of match reports I read, including one on the RT website, didn't actually reference it. It was kind of like it passed some people by. It happened so quickly.
Oh, I know. But you look, Mikey, it's
that's,
the
and that's not to say it should have been let go. I'm just
it's the quickest
it
game in the world.
By.
And look, this is not a VAR call. This is not a VAR call. We don't need it. We don't need it in Ireland. But a team of officials work as a team. Work as a team and say to him, James, you're going to have to take that again. It's like, how can the umpires not have seen this, Lance? Really, like, they're the two people standing in the same position as Barry Hogan. Like.
Yeah.
I don't know. And look, this is not to take away from Watford. I think where they have come from the league, they're giving great performances. Their best players are back playing for them. You're talking about the 3-6 that Wexford had. Watford have that in Cunty and De Burke. I thought when Cunty went off, he was a loss. And Mark Keogh really roared into the game with 4 points from play. But we're talking about the one percenters. And we're talking about mistakes being made. And we're talking about Henry Shefflin's career being on the line as a manager. Liam Cahill's career as a manager could potentially have nearly been done and dusted if we don't come out with a point the other night. And these things play into the one percenters, these decisions that are made. And like people might be roaring me, you know, or whatever, and saying, so why don't you become a ref? Look, I know it's a tough job, but geez, lads, don't run in front of the goalkeeper before a penalty has been taken. And if it does happen, just put the hands up and say, got that one wrong. Let's try and learn from mistakes. There you go. Rant over. Sorry.
Revenge for the ghost goal.
Served cold.
Did somebody run in front of the umpires that day? Maybe they did.
No. I think your rant is allowed, Shane, because it was mind boggling.
The only thing is, I tried to check because I couldn't really hear on the effects mic. Did he blow the whistle to say that Bennett was okay to actually begin the lift and strike process? Because I couldn't actually hear that. No, maybe he did. And if he did, well, then, you know, obviously he would have needed to blow on it again to say, hang on. But I think sometimes in a situation like that, if you're a referee and you make a blunder and you know that you've got to rectify that blunder, and no matter what you do. So if he overturns that and says to Bennett, you've got to retake it, right? And next thing Barry Hogan saves the retaking penalty, then all of a sudden he's got this exact conversation flipped on its head.
I know, but like say, you know, take the booze from the home crowd to do the right thing.
Yeah. No, that is fair. Listen, I thought it was an outstanding game.